The year was 2007. The incessant creaks of a spinning ceiling fan were the only sound in the office. A regular man was sitting at his regular job, procrastinating on the same task he did the day before. The cubicle walls were beige, his desk, beige, his life, beige. He then made a decision to leave that beige world once and for all and embark on one of the most colorful entrepreneurial journeys of our time. He started by getting companies to pay him to wear their t-shirts. He then sold his last name, twice, and then wrote the world's first ever fully sponsored book. Now, the man who has sold everything is in the middle of what might be his craziest stunt yet. He's quite literally selling his future, and he's doing it so he can help creative professionals take action and make money doing what they love.
Hello, hackers. Thanks a lot for joining us for another episode of the Hacking UI podcast, where we hack our way through design, development, and entrepreneurship. I'm Sagi Schreiber.
And I'm David Tintner.
Our guest today is one of the most creative entrepreneurs in the world, and we believe you'll be blown away and inspired by this episode, just like we were.
Ladies and gents, it's our pleasure to present to you Jason Zook.
Let's get hacking. All right, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Hacking UI podcast. I'm Sagi Schreiber. With me here is David. David, what's up?
Hey everybody.
And with us is Jason Zook. Jason, what's up, man?
Gents, good to be here. Virtually, of course, I'm not there with you in beautiful Israel, but I'm in beautiful California, so we can just compare the beautiful places we live.
But it sure feels like it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and man, we're thrilled to have you here. We are great fans and we support everything that you do, and we just are inspired by all you're doing. It seems to go on like on 2x speed all the time and launching more cool stuff. Then it's very inspiring.
Definitely. And before we begin, maybe you can just, for our listeners who aren't already familiar with your awesome work, can you just give a little bit of your background?
Yeah, I'm most well known for being the guy who got paid to wear t-shirts for a living for 5 years, which is just a ridiculous way to enter the entrepreneurial world. In the recession in 2007, I decided, oh, let's have the internet pay me money to do things. And I was super inspired by the $1 million homepage, with it, which I think so many entrepreneurs have been in their careers, is you just see something, you're like, okay, if that guy can do that, I can do something, whatever that is. Because I never did anything entrepreneurial before that. I worked normal jobs, not super overly creative or anything. But yeah, after that, I went on to do a couple other weird things. I sold my last name twice, which was super just crazy. I wrote the first ever fully sponsored book with 204 companies that basically helped me make money to write a book, because as a first-time author, you don't usually get a book deal. You don't, you know, there's nothing you can do making money. And I made $75,000, which was really cool. And I got to pocket all of that money, which is fantastic. And most recently, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit, I have sold my future. And as of recording this, we're actually in the middle or the beginning of the launch of Selling My Future, which is another ridiculous project. And I think that's the thing for me. Like, I just like doing a lot of things. I like building stuff. I like creating. And really, at the end of all that, it's helping other people do the thing that they want to do just through my outlet of doing it differently.
Yeah. And we're going to get into that, like, for sure. We have so much to ask you about Buy My Future. But before that, so let's go back to when you started out. So you said it's because you were inspired by the $1 million homepage. To anyone who doesn't know what that was, can you just say about that a few words?
Yeah, well, I'll even set the picture for you because I remember it vividly. I'm sitting in a beige office working at a 9-to-5 job. Like, everything's beige. Beige walls, beige desk, beige monitor, beige everything. It's just awful. And I get an email from a guy that I work with. And this is 2005, I think, is when the $1 million homepage happened. And so there's not social media. Like, you're not refreshing Twitter all day. You're not sitting on Facebook all day. You're getting emails from people when cool stuff happens. That's it. Like, or a call. Oh my gosh, hold the phone. Like, craziness, right? But I get this email from my buddy who's like, hey, you're weird. You'll like this. And so I click on it and I'm like, my mind just explodes. And basically this guy, Alex Tu, made this website where every pixel on the website, there were a million pixels, and you could buy a pixel for a dollar and put whatever you wanted on it. So obviously people didn't buy one pixel because you couldn't see anything. You had to buy like 10 or 100 or 1,000, and that would fill up like a little banner. And it became this huge billboard on the internet. I mean, as big as a web page gets, but it was crazy with all the different companies. And And what I think is really unique about it is I dug into the story more, where most people just were like, oh, this guy made $1 million doing this. No, he didn't. He made like $50,000 in the first couple of days, and then bought press releases for all the big major media outlets. And then they picked it up because it was such a cool story. And so he ended up continuing to spend money to get eyeballs on all this stuff. And at the end of the day, I think he walked away with like $500,000 or something, which is still unbelievable. It's still fantastic. But it just was the concept of it. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. This is so like eye-opening to me. And then I look around, everything's beige again. And I'm like, shit, what can I do? You know, like I want, of course I wanted to do like the $2 million homepage. But actually, I was fortunate enough to think like, I don't ever want to be the guy that just copies someone else's success. I want to put my own unique twist on it. And so I think that has been a thread that I've tried to do with every project I've done, where I've never really done anything that just is like mind-blowingly different. Like, I've never even thought of that. It's more like, oh, that's a kind of a crazy twist on selling something.
Well, I think your standards for mind-blowingly different must be pretty high, because I mean, when I first saw your thing, like you said, I guess it was your first project, right? The I'll wear your t-shirt for money. I mean, that is, for most people, I think that's pretty mind-blowingly different.
Yeah, I guess it's in context, right? I mean, you're totally right. And I think that that's so different for everybody. And with every idea that I have, and I think this is, I hope your listeners can totally appreciate this, is I always feel like a fraud. I always feel like this isn't original. Someone's going to find some other version of this. And maybe I thought about it in like the back of my mind at some point years ago because I saw something else. And now I did it and I'm like, this is my idea. And you're like, no, it's not. It's someone else's that you cobble together. And I think that's okay. You know, I think that like Austin Kleon wrote the book Steal Like an Artist, which is a very popular book. And I highly recommend it. Just a very quick, short read about doing that is, and I'll never forget actually, when I was working in that beige existence, there was a like VP or something at ESPN that we worked with because I worked in the sports world. And I'll never forget, she said in a meeting, she said, steal with pride. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting because everyone steals. Nothing is super original anymore. There's always just an amalgamation of all this different stuff. And so I think you're right. Like my context of wildly different is a little bit different, but it's also okay to steal when you're putting your own unique kind of flavor with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so how did the I Wear a T-shirt go?
Yeah, it's a roller coaster, my friend. As I think most people who build anything, especially their first venture, will tell you, even my later ventures are still roller coasters, but it started out with nothing. I put up a website, I launched the website, which basically just meant like it was live, it was available, and 12 people showed up on the first day. And you can imagine my disappointment when you like put all your heart and soul into this and you think it's amazing, it's such a cool idea, and no one shows up. And then you realize, oh, the internet is humongous and putting up a website is like putting up a billboard in the middle of the desert. How's someone going to find it? You have to give them a map. You have to show them. You have to talk about it. You have to lead them to it. And so that's what I started doing. I got on Twitter and I started just like talking to random people and not trying to be spammy and like at replying 100 people and saying, go check out Ivory Shirt. Go check out Ivory Shirt. I didn't do that. It was more just trying to get in conversations with people and try and be interesting. And it started to take off slowly but surely. And by the day that I like started wearing shirts, which was January 1st, 2009, I launched it in October, a couple months prior. I had 6.5 months of the calendar booked. And one of the cool things about the project was the pricing structure I came up with, which I now call bump sale, which was it was $1 on the first day, $2 on the second day, $3 on the third day. And so the barrier to entry was super low. And I always like to tell the story that Zappos bought the 29th day. Day, which was a huge credibility builder for me. And if you know Zappos, they're a billion-dollar company. They're so well-known. But I'm also like, Zappos, you're a billion-dollar company. Why'd you only spend $29? Like, afforded, like, the whole year would have been cheap for you. But yeah, the project was really cool. It was just me the first year. I grew it the second year to 2 people and doubled the price. And that sold out fairly quickly because then I had some good notoriety and buzz. And right around 2010 was like the peak of I Wear a Shirt at its height of popularity. And then it slowly started to like trend kind of plateau in 2011. I moved to 5 people at 5 times the price because I was stuck in this startup mindset where I was reading all these stories of funding and growth and you know, all this stuff. And I'm like, oh yeah, I want to do that. I want $1 million company and all this stuff. Well, I got to a $500,000 company in 2011 and I'd never been more stressed out in my life. I had 8 people that depended on me. I was miserable. I literally worked every single day, 16 hours a day. My super comfy beige 9-to-5 job that I got to turn off now became this like 14-hour grind every single day. And I just kept doing it because I thought this is what is cool, right? This is what we all read about. Like, this is it. I'm in my moment. It sucked. It really did. And so that business kind of tapered down. And, it, you know, the highlights at the end of it, while all said and done, $1.2 million in revenue, over 2,000 companies worked with, some of the biggest companies in the world. But at the end of it, I walked away dejected, stressed, $100,000 in debt. And I learned so many lessons. I would not go back and change anything, even the gaining of like 50 pounds of entrepreneurial weight, even like the no sleep I didn't get for years, losing my hair probably, you know, like all this stuff, the unhealthy things that I had to do to keep the business going, because it got me to where I am today. And that was my kind of like big hurdle and obstacle and roadblock I had to get through. But I did learn a lot about like the glamorousness of startup culture, and that I didn't really want to be a part of that. And also what it means to make $1 million, what it means to make even hundreds of thousands of dollars, you have to give up a lot of stuff. You have to sacrifice a lot of things. So I'm going to stop talking. That was a long thing. I had a lot of baggage with I Wear Your Shirt. I still do. We're 4 years removed and I'm still like, I still feel it.
Yeah. I mean, we had our share of startup life as well, I guess. Dee, what do you say?
Yeah, definitely. We can completely relate. Two different startups. And now Sagi and I are definitely trying to do something different and not, you know, go the funding route and the Silicon Valley thing. So totally relate to what you said there. And I want to back you up a second, because you said something really interesting. You said a lot of things really interesting there, like 30 yeah. questions. But the first thing I want to say that you said was before you even launched I'll Wear Your Shirt, you had about half a year already booked. So how,
yeah.
So you're like, just to kind of set the scene, tell me if this is correct. You're like a first-time entrepreneur. You come up with this crazy idea. You say you launch a website. There's like barely, there's 12 people visited the first time. And how did you manage to get half a year booked? Even if it was part of the year at like a cheap price, how did you get anyone to buy it when, and let alone half a year?
I think this is something that I have stumbled upon naturally. It just for me is something that makes sense, which is try and sell something ahead of time before it even exists to prove that someone wants to pay for it, right? And now we all know that, right? You read so much stuff about that and it makes total sense. But for me, as someone who I never read a business book, not a single one, never taken a business class. I didn't have any of that stuff. But it just made sense to me to say, okay, this idea is really weird. People can buy it ahead of time, so why not let them reserve the space? It's super cheap, you know, a couple dollars a day, $29. Come on, Zappa. Still bitter. No, love Zappa. Like I've been able to use that line for so long. So thank you so much, Tony. He doesn't listen. He doesn't care about us anyway. But what I basically did is I just kept reaching out to people. And one of the things that I did then, which I now know and continue to do is, you know, I used my inbox. Like my email inbox was my most important asset at the time. And that was because there were people that trusted me and that knew me. And so I could email them and not say, hey, I just launched I Wear Your Shirt. Will you buy? We all get those emails, even from friends. And you're like, come on, man, really? Like, I want to support you, but I'm not going to buy your thing. Like, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And I knew that. I didn't want that email myself. So I just sent emails to friends, family, contacts. And it wasn't a lot of people, maybe 100 total, because I didn't have that many people that I could contact. And all I said was, here's this crazy idea. I really believe it's going to do something cool. If you know anybody that just might be interested in learning more about it, would you forward this email? Would you tell somebody whatever? And really, that's what did it. You know, like I continued to do that thing. And here's the secret sauce to that, which is it's not the first email that matters. It's the follow-up email afterwards. The follow-up email is always the one that does the job, because you send the first email and someone goes, oh, yeah, I want to help Jason. I like Jason. Yes, let's do this. And then what happens? Like their baby cries or their boss yells at them or they like have to go on an errand or something. And life gets in the way, right? They have to do something else. But then when you show up in their inbox because you planned for it a couple days later, you're like, hey, man, remember when I sent you that email? Did you get a chance to forward it to anybody? Just curious. Like, no worries if you didn't. They're like, thank you so much for reminding me. My baby was crying for 4 days straight. Now I can do this for you. My baby has stopped crying. So that was the huge thing. That is literally how I got people to buy in, is I followed up. I kept pestering people in like a very friendly way. But I put in the work, and it was work. And every day I sat at my laptop and I emailed people and I had conversations on Twitter, you know, and I started doing a couple little things. Like I decided to do a live video show every day. So I started doing some live video kind of pre-launch stuff on Ustream at the time, which is a big live video platform in 2009, 2008. And that started to build some buzz as well.
Okay. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. So going on later after I Wear Your T-shirt. So your next gig was the Selling Your Last Name, or was it before something else? Yeah. So how do you get about doing that?
when you sell your T-shirt for 4 years at that time, you're just now looking for anything to sell, right? Like I'm looking around my house. I'm like, what can I sell? But truthfully,
what
I had
can
had
be
had
more
so,
extreme.
I know, right? Oh, I had so many things sponsored at that time. Like my dog had worn sponsored shirts, which is crazy, which wasn't even my decision. Like the community that literally like showed up to I Wear Your Shirt, they loved my dog. Like they saw him in pictures and everything. They're like, your dog should wear a shirt. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to like, you know, sell out my dog or whatever. But people kept asking. Then people started just sending me PayPal money. They're like, here's $50. Like, put your dog in a t-shirt or, you know, like, whatever. And I'm like, all right, maybe I'll collect this money. So I actually ended up raising like $10,000 through him wearing shirts, my dog, and donated it to a charity, which was so cool. Like, didn't pocket any of the money. I know, it was ridiculous. I could see, you guys can't see David's face. He's like, jaw agape, like, what?
This is the world's best entrepreneurial dog.
I know. He might be. Like, if he would have kept going, he'd be so famous on Instagram right now, it wouldn't even be funny. But he was too early. But yeah, I had a sponsored road trip. I had a sponsored fitness challenge. I had sponsored underwear, sponsored jeans. Like, I had done all these cool things. And then I had an unfortunate family situation that occurred. And my mom said she was getting a divorce from my stepfather at the time. And now I bring, like, the whole, like, moment down. Like, oh. But in that moment, though, you know, it kind of dawned on me, like, my identity is not shaped by my name. You know, where you guys have probably had your last names your entire life. One last name, I'm guessing, your entire life. Yep. They're both nodding. You guys can't hear them nod, so I'll say it. This is the majority of people. Like, 90% of the population has always had the same last name. I'd had three up until that point. And I had nothing holding on to that last name. And so I'm in the middle of this I Reassure project, or kind of like tail end of it, but I thought I was in the middle. I had this unfortunate family situation. It wasn't a pretty family situation. And I'm like, I don't want this last name. I don't want to be Jason Sadler anymore. I want to move to something else. But how do you pick a name? You know, like, you don't just open a like white pages. Who even has white pages anymore? Most people don't even know what those are. Like, young people don't even know what white pages are. All right. Back in our day, you had to like anyway. So I was sitting at lunch with my girlfriend and the guy that was working with me. And it just like shot to the front of my brain. And I was like, what if I sold my last name? What if I literally put up, just like the space on my t-shirt, my name became a thing that I could have sponsored for a year. And I think they both looked at me and they're like, okay, we know you're crazy, but like, this is a little much. And I was like, but it's temporary. Like, what does it matter? It doesn't matter at all. Like, it's really not a big deal. I can just change it later if I want to change it back. And I had I would have full control. Like, no, there's not going to be a porn industry that's going to grab my last name. You know, nowadays it'd be like Trump's campaign would be paying me to be like, Jason, vote for Trump. And that would be just awful and terrible. But I had first right of refusal. Like, that was one thing I set up. So I built this auction. You know, I didn't want to do it on eBay or anything. Like, I thought that could have had some organic, you know, result if I put it on eBay. But I like to control the experience, the design experience of every project I make, which I know you guys can really like appreciate, because I want the first impression of when anybody looks at anything to not be where it lives, but to be like how it exists. You know, okay. So if you think about like when you go to eBay, it's like, well, you're in the eBay ecosystem, so you can only look so good. But if I do it on my own site, if I buy a domain like buymylastname.com and I make it look exactly how I want and use the functionality that works with that thing, that creates an experience. And so I do that with every site. Like, you'll see that in everything I've ever done. And I always have tried to really make that experience solid. And so when I launched this site, it was $0 on the first day. And I did the same thing. I built a little pre-launch email list before that. I emailed friends and family, told them to like, hey, get ready for this. I'm launching this project. It's going to be crazy. I promise you, you're going to be like, what are you doing? And when I launched it on the first day, my goal was $5,000. It was a 30-day auction. If I can get to $5,000 for my last name being sold, cool. That's a fun story. At the end of the first day, 24 hours, the bidding went to $30,000.
Wow.
On the first day.
24 hours in, you got $30,000. It was bid up to $30,000. Wow.
I'm still just as surprised as you are. Like, I remember like seeing my phone, because we'd set up like a really crude notification system, like when I got a bid or whatever. And I just was like, I can't believe this. This is insane. And so, you know, I started to tell the media contacts that I had from I Reassure, like, hey, I'm doing this idea. It's getting some traction. And so I ended up getting on like Fox and Friends and New York Times and all these other different media outlets and sat down with a CNN reporter. And it just was really cool. And so it ended up selling for $45,500. The company that bought it was a company called Headsets.com. They're actually, it's really funny, they're the Zappos of headsets.
Okay.
So when you think like office, like their company culture is so great. They care so much, but they sell a really boring thing, headsets. You know, it's not like an exciting thing, but they're a really cool company. Like, their CEO is awesome. I got to go to their offices after the sale happened. And so, yeah, I sold my last name that time. And then I wasn't necessarily going to do it a second time, but then I thought about writing my book after that. And I was like, front cover of a book, big author namespace, like this feels like it could be another opportunity to do By My Last Name one more time, because I don't want to like just keep, I don't like to just keep redoing things over and over. I like to think of the new idea and explore and get crazier. So I sold it a second time, did an auction again, made $50,000 the second time with a surfing app called Surfer, S-U-R-F-R, which is super cool. They're still around.
And
they're
great, actually like, great name for you too, huh? You got lucky on that one.
That was a good one. My joke always, cool. So like, when I was jasonheadsets.com, because literally it was like the D-O-T-C-O-M, I would go to hotels or whatever, and they'd be like, what's your name? And I'm like, oh, checking in headsets.com. They're like, no, not the company name. What's your name? And I'm like, oh, God. I'm like, okay, my last name is – and I had it on my license too. So I'd be like, okay, let's just skip all the thing. Here's my license. But yeah, when – so people would – you know, when you tell them your last name is headsets.com, they're like, wait, what? But when I told them it was Surfer App, they're like, oh, is that like a Scandinavian name? Like, what is that? You know, like it sounds like a normal. So I always joked, I was like, it's a piece of IKEA furniture. Like, that's what it is. Like, it's, oh, that's the Surfer App. Yeah, you can put it vertically or horizontally. Like, it works. But yeah, so and the other really cool thing about the Buy My Last Name project, two cool things, I'll say. I'm gonna toot my own horn here. Two cool things. One, I donated 10% of the profit each year to a charity. So it was cool. I got to donate basically $10,000 to companies that never would have gotten that money because I saw my last name, which was really fun. The second is that during that process, it really started to have me think about, well, who do I want to be? You know, what, Jason, what? What do I want to be for the rest of my life? And I started to actually have conversations with my grandmother during this time that I'd never had before about my great grandfather. And she said, you know, I don't know if you know this, but your great grandfather was an entrepreneur. You know, he didn't, you know, didn't do what you do, obviously. But, you know, when he was in the 70s, he started a power company and actually won the Nikola Tesla Award for his work in the power industry. And I was like, whoa, wait a second. Like, this is in my blood. This is in my heritage. And so when she told me that, I was like, well, I really think I want to take his last name forward because it hadn't passed on. It had kind of passed with him. And so that's how I ended up with Zook. And I don't think I really would have thought about taking that last name or learning more about my grandfather or great-grandfather had I not done the selling of the last name thing. So it was a really kind of fun evolution into where I am now.
I got to say, I thought the story was going to end with you saying that your grandfather's last name was like you know, grandfather, floridapowerandlight.com or something.
He was a super visionary. He just was like, talk about way before your time. He was decades before his time.
That's a really interesting story. So now just before we continue, let's take a short sponsor break and we'll be right back. We have tons to talk about.
Hey everyone, hope you are enjoying this episode so far. This episode is actually sponsored by us today.
That's right. We are soon launching the second batch of the Side Project Accelerator, which is our very own program where we teach everything we learned while growing Hacking UI from a side project into a full-time gig that allowed us to quit our jobs. You see, we have a very specific philosophy for side projects, and it's centered around what we call audience-driven product development. That means that you first have to build an audience even before you've created a product that you want to sell. And then when you want to create products and monetize, you'll know exactly who you're doing it for and exactly who's going to pay you.
That's what we teach in this program. And we will walk you through the steps to build your personal brand, gather an audience, and create super valuable content. When you're done with the program, you'll have the perfect foundation for framing yourself as a thought leader, a clear path to developing products for your audience, and the tools you need to start making money. The Side Project Accelerator is a members-only community and online program. It includes recorded lessons, live stream sessions with the most successful side project entrepreneurs in the world, and access to a closed mastermind group.
And we can't stress enough how important the community is. We just finished the first batch, and it was incredible to see how everyone helped each other out and held each other accountable. And the best part is, they still are, even after the program has ended.
Yeah, and once you join the community, you actually get lifetime access, not only to the community itself, but to all expert sessions, Q&A sessions with us, new lessons, and bonuses that we give out to our members. You can learn more about the Side Project Accelerator at hackingui.com/SPA. And since you're listening to this podcast and we really appreciate your support, when you sign up for the waiting list, we'll send you a code for $100 off the tuition price.
Now, spots are very limited and we expect it to sell out quickly. So if you're thinking about joining us, sign up soon. Yeah, so again, that's hackingui.com/SPA to sign up. And if you use that URL to sign up, we'll email you $100 off the tuition. Getting into like the tactics of what you did here, you said something really interesting. You were expecting the first time to only make $5,000. Yet you built out a site and you said people were working for you or helping you at least build this. So it had to have been a serious time investment, monetary investment, I'm assuming too. Can you talk to us about that a little bit? How you went about like taking on such a big investment and exactly what kind of investment it was?
Yeah, I really learned over the years, one of the things that I think is a skill of mine is that I'm okay to outsource my weaknesses. I think a lot of entrepreneurs will really try and like cover up their weaknesses, you know, with their like, I'll do the design, I'll do the development, because they can. I probably could have done those things. Like my background was in graphic design. I knew some basic coding and CSS and, you know, the like hardcore payment engine stuff, especially of the Buy My Last Name site. Like I couldn't have done that. I could have just outsourced that. But what I realized is the mental energy and the effort that it takes for me to do a design, to do the development, to go through all the headaches of me having to do that takes away from the creativity that I could possibly come up with, right? We only have so much mental space and so much kind of willpower to get things out into the world. And I really believe that this, guys, is why I keep coming up with these ideas and I keep being able to execute them. That's the thing, is because I don't get into the weeds of doing all the stuff. Now, I draw the wireframes of the website. I have a vision for what I want it to look like. I direct the people who do it and I make sure that it looks and acts how I want it to, down to like the curvature of buttons. However, I'm not spending all my time and energy doing that. I'm focusing on the bigger picture. And so I've done this with every project now, and I continue to do it. So what I do is I just find great people. And, you know, now I have the luxury because I'm 10 years into my entrepreneurial journey. I've been, you know, introduced to so many people. I've had so many people come across my radar who are talented and good at UI or UX or development or Rails or, you know, whatever it is their specialty that they do. Mm-hmm. And that has really given me a pool of people that I can pick from when I'm doing stuff. But at the time when I first got started, it was really just, okay, how do I find someone to do this? Well, I'm going to ask my friends, because again, that's the only thing I have at my disposal. I'm just going to email people and say, do you know any great developers? Do you know anybody who can do something cool? And I got introduced to a friend of a friend. I knew the guy that I initially asked through car stuff. I was big into cars at the time, and he was just a car guy. I didn't think he would know anybody, but he knew another car guy who was a developer and who liked working on little side projects.
Okay.
So he did the Buy My Last Name site, I think for like $1,500 was what he was going to charge me. But he was really cool. He was like, listen, I know you're an entrepreneur. Like, if you pay me half up front and half when it's done, totally good. Like, I know you need to like make money from this. Like, and it was really a great deal for me because I was like, oh, I don't have to come out of cash in hand. I found a designer, actually, I think it was on 99designs.com. And I had never wanted to use that site because I'm a design purist and I'm like, I don't want to do this. But I was like, maybe there's a needle in the haystack here. You know, like I could spend the money, and the money for me would not be on the actual design I would get. It would be to find the good designer. Mm-hmm. And I did. I found a really great designer who was there. He's in the Philippines. I've used him for years. Like I continue to use him. He just did a logo for a project I'm using right now. And so I found these people and kind of plugged them in. And so I've done that with every site. Everything that I've done, I try and find the people like, okay, who do I want to do the design work? Okay, who do I want to do making sure the experience is good? Who do I want to make sure that the development is good? Who do I want to make sure that like the site works and every all the web hooks and all these things that I don't want to have to figure out, I don't want to spend time on, I can make those things happen.
Cool. So now you have a core team of people that you know exactly who to go to for each project.
And none of them are full-time employees. They're all people that I just reach out to. They're their own business owners or their own freelancers. They do their own projects. But I know that at a, you know, I can give them a heads up on a project and they'll be like, yeah, I'm in. Because number one, they're going to get some notoriety from the project of people being, who designed this? You know, who developed this? And I can pass that info along. But also they get another piece for their portfolio that's like, eh, I did so-and-so boring project, but then look at this ridiculous one I did for this guy. And that gets them a little bit of marketing and attention. And I've really seen that work for people. And I just think it's a really nice system to build where you don't have to hire and build a whole team. That's another startup thing, right? Like you got to have a full-time designer. You got to have a full-time UI guy, UX guy. You got to have all this stuff. No, you don't. You outsource it. You try and be as frugal as possible. You know what you pay for, right? Or you get what you pay for. So you pay good money for the design that you get, but you also realize I don't need to keep somebody on for months on end. I need them to do the project and then we can move on together. So that's been a really good system for me to keep going. And so, yeah, I have this kind of roster of people that I can choose from as I move on.
Cool.
Very cool.
Okay. So I want you to kind of walk us through what your day looked like at this time. Cause you said you basically jumped from the t-shirts to selling your last name. And in between, are you working on other projects? Are you employed or are you totally entrepreneur? And what were you doing? What was your day like?
Yeah. So from 2009, January 1st, 2009 to May 6th, 2013, I got up every single day. I made a YouTube video, filmed, scripted, edited, uploaded, which takes hours. If you guys want to try that for a week, give it a shot. Tell me how easy it is to do it every single day. I hosted a live video show for an hour. I took some photos. I posted stuff on social media. I was getting a couple hundred emails a day, so I had to answer those. And then I had to keep the business afloat. So I had to like manage the employees that I had. I had to do the marketing. I had to do the sales. I had to make sure things were working. I had to follow up with people and orders. There was so much customer service. There was just so much stuff going on. And in May of 2013, when I finally decided to walk away from the iRear shirt business and let go of that, it was so like soul crushing because this was my baby, right? This was the first thing I had ever built. This was the thing that defined who I was. And I had so much consternation about this because I thought that if I let go of this idea, I'm never going to have another one, right? I'm never going to have another idea like this. And I think that that's a scarcity mindset that we all convince ourselves of. And it's not true. We all come up with ideas and you can always come up with more ideas, but the ideas aren't the thing. We know this. Execution is the thing. The idea is only as good as that you can get it out into the world and get people to pay for it and use it and whatever. Yeah. And so in 2013, when I walked away from my rear shirt, I was in the middle of the two last name sales. So I had some money. Luckily, I had some buffer to like figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And I was really just lost. And so I went to a conference to speak. I'd been doing a lot of public speaking at that time because iRear Shirt was super popular. And I got up on stage and I actually just bared my soul in front of this small audience. And they probably didn't even know it was coming. I know the guys who put on the conference did not know it was coming. They expected me to be like, iRear Shirt is so great. Here's how awesome my life is. And instead I was like, everything sucks. I'm poor and everything's just bad. But it was a moment for me where I was finally able to let go of so many things I was holding on to because my day was always about having a perfect day for all these different companies. I couldn't have a bad day. It was not a good way to set up your life. But I remember there was a guy who spoke at that conference. His name is Joshua Fields Milburn. He co-runs a site called TheMinimalist.com. And he started telling his story about how he was working at these jobs and he was constantly climbing the corporate ladder and spending money and he got into debt and he was never happy. And he just felt like he was constantly, you know, just grasping at straws to be happy and to be comfortable. And I was like, wow, a lot of this sounds like me. You know, what's this minimalism thing all about? And I started to learn more about this and really like that for me was the first step of bearing my soul, hearing about minimalism, and then being willing to ask for help. So that was a huge thing. So I know you're asking like what I did, you think business-wise, but I actually had to do some soul searching before I could do more business stuff. Mm-hmm. And I finally got the courage to talk to a woman who I guess she's a life coach. She's an author. She's a really cool lady. Her name's Pamela Slim. I don't even think she would say she's a life coach because that is such a bad connotation. But I got on a Skype call with her and I really just like unloaded. I mean, she probably was like, whoa, but I think she's used to that, you know? And she didn't say anything incredibly enlightening. She didn't say anything that I wouldn't say if someone else was on the other side of the screen to me. But I think being able to let that out and not have it just sit in my brain and fester. And I think that as entrepreneurs, I mean, you guys probably know this, like you guys have each other, right? So you can always talk about and like, oh, when something's going wrong, you have someone to share with. When you're kind of by yourself, when you don't have an outlet, it can really fester and you don't realize how much of a stress that puts on you. And you have to just kind of like let these feelings out and let them go. And so when I finally did this, it was a huge sigh of relief. And she really, you know, the thing that I think she did is she gave me permission to let go of iRear Shirt and to also appreciate it for what it was, not to look at it as the failure of a company that didn't make it. She's like, no, man, you made $1 million wearing t-shirts. Like, that's ridiculous. Take that in for a moment. You know, like all the things you're able to do, just like stop looking at the fact that it failed, that you ended up in debt. Those are lessons. Yes, you should talk about those. You should share those. And I have. I continue to sell those. But she was like, you also have to realize what this did for you so that you can move forward and move past it. And that was huge for me. It was accepting the fact that, yes, there was bad, but there was also good. And so that really, I think, gave me permission to say, okay, well, now what do I want to do? I'm obviously not a one-hit wonder because I did the last name thing. So I now have two ideas. I'm a two-hit wonder. You know, what can I do moving forward? And I met with a guy for lunch and it was right as I was kind of getting through all this stuff and I was really starting to embrace minimalism in a sense of letting go of all the iRear Shirt stuff that I had collected over the years, kind of just like letting go of a lot of digital clutter as well. Like all these things I was keeping, I was like, I don't need to keep all this stuff. Like I have screenshots on screenshots on screenshots in folders of all these little moments that happen in life. I'll keep like 10 of them, you know, it'll be enough. And I started talking to him, a buddy of mine. He was like, you need to write a book. And I was like, yeah, but there's no happy ending here. You know, like I don't have the like, and then I made $20 million and bought a yacht. And now I live in the, you know, payments. And he's like, yeah, but he's like, I think you could write the book that people will really appreciate because that didn't happen. You know, that it's a real story that they can read. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And so I'm literally driving home from that lunch. And this is like right at the point in my life, I have $9 in my bank account. No joke. I still kept that screenshot. I have that $100,000 in debt for my business. And I'm driving home and I'm like, could I be an author? I mean, I've only really ever written tweets and emails. So I don't have a lot of like accreditation to write a book. But I was like, there's millions of books out there. I don't have to be the first person who's ever like not had experience doing this. I think I could write a book. And by the time I got home, it was like a 20-minute drive home. I was sitting in my driveway and I was like, what if I got sponsors for the book? I've gotten sponsors for all my other projects, like everything, my dog, come on now. You know, I've gotten like sponsors for everything. I've got to be able to do something with this. And then the idea kind of cobbled together for me was, if I got a sponsor for every page of the book, I'd write the book at 200 pages, let's just say that. But this would be the first ever fully sponsored book, and it would be my way to like crowdfund. You know, and Kickstarter was around at this time. This is 2013. So it was there, but it wasn't definitely the thing that it is now. And I was like, I think I could do this. I have an audience. I have a community. I have a roster of sponsors who paid me money. So I already have existing customers who like me. Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can do this. And so I put together a website. I bought the domain sponsormybook.com. Started putting it out to people. And just like I talked about with I Reassured, for like 3 to 5 months, I just sent emails, promoted this thing, sold the sponsorships as much as I could. And by the end of it, I made $75,000. I hadn't written a single word of the book yet. There was just a title. That was it. But people believed in it, right? They believed in the idea. They liked the idea. They thought it was interesting. And then I went on to write the book. And I love to say it has not become a bestseller, because that's like the thing. Everyone's like, the book's a bestseller in category of like entrepreneurship, self-help, self-help for kittens, self-help for kittens who like yarn, self-help for kittens who like yarn and play with their toes. Like the most obscure categories ever, but you get to say it. Like, I don't give a shit about that. I don't care about the award of being a bestseller. That's not what mattered to me. What mattered to me was writing a real book that other entrepreneurs, that other creatives, that other makers, that people who just want to aspire to be creative and put their thing out into the world could relate to. And that's what I did. And I wrote the book in 2 weeks, which is also crazy because it's a super ridiculous time. My editor and book coach was like, "You're a machine." And I was like, "Well, yeah, I am a machine. You know, like that, I need to embrace that. Like I work really hard. I can get this stuff done." Yeah. And so I put this book out into the world and it did really well. You know, it sold tens of thousands of copies or something like that, but never a bestseller. It's been out for a couple of years now. People continue to send me emails. They're like, this book has been life-changing for me on changing my perspective on thinking and all this other stuff that I'm doing. And I just have really appreciated, you know, what has come from that book. So yeah, that long-winded journey of telling you how I went from kind of I Reassured by my last name and to sponsor my book. And then right in that time, I was starting to kind of play with some digital product stuff as well.
What a journey it was.
Yeah.
I think Sagi and I are both still in shock.
We're kind of like, jaws open.
I feel like your listeners are going to be like, when is this guy going to stop telling these crazy stories? And the funny thing is that there's still more. Like that's the insane thing about, I think, being an entrepreneur and really embracing the fact of like who you are. Like I'm a creator. I'm a doer of stuff. I make things. That is where I get like all of my personal fulfillment besides like relationships and people. But let's talk about business fulfillment. I love making stuff, guys. I love putting crazy ideas out there. And I really like challenging myself to look at the world differently and to do things so differently that people are like, I may not maybe want this thing, or I may not think this thing is, you know, something I need, but I can't deny the fact that the story here is really cool, or the way that this is being done is really interesting.
That's amazing. And I mean, all of that you told us so far is just like jaw-dropping, mind-blowing, and inspiring.
Okay, cool. So you were totally all over the place. You're sponsoring every possible thing you can, and that is a ridiculous journey. So one thing I wanted to ask you about is you always had like these people that you can reach out to, and you always had like kind of this audience of, I assume, not just sponsors who are paying, but also an audience of people who are following you and into your work, right? And you mentioned that you were YouTubing and blogging and doing all sorts of stuff like that along the way. So Yep. Can you talk about how you're gaining this audience of both on the sponsor side and the people who are following you, people who are buying your stuff?
Yeah, I think honestly, like the biggest thing for me was I just showed up. You know, I showed up on different platforms. I showed up in different places. I was super early to being on YouTube. I mean, I was on YouTube in 2008. Like this is before YouTuber was a phrase. I hosted a live video show every single day. And I think the big thing for me that helped me build a community was I was just always around. I was always there. Like I just didn't disappear for moments on end. I just tried to always be in the community. And the other thing is I cared. Like I cared about every single person that I interacted with, that emailed me, that showed up for a live show. I mean, I could probably still rattle off 50 names of people who showed up to my live video shows 7 years ago, because I really cared about them. And I believed in the fact that if they showed up for me, I should show up for them. And I think that's one thing that's always just been so interesting to me is someone will email me and, you know, they'll ask me something and I'll respond. They're like, "Wow, you replied." I'm like, "What'd you think was going to happen? You emailed me," you know? And it's kind of weird to live in a culture where, you know, maybe like e-celebrities, if you will, like if I'm a very small version of that, that those people don't reply, right? Like they just live this air of like, oh, I'm too important to reply. And I can't buy into that. Like I like to be the person that people hear from. And especially because, and I'll give credit to Seth Godin, who's a very prolific marketing author. I emailed him super early on in my entrepreneurial journey and he wrote back. And I was like, whoa, this is cool. Like, I've heard of you. You're a published author. You're a bestseller, like a real one, not a fake kittens who do things with their toes one. You know, and that was really influential to me to be able to say, well, I should do this for other people as well. And so I think, yeah, just also trying to be helpful is probably the other thing. You know, whenever someone emails me, I try not to just like push them off onto something I've written or do anything else. Like I try and give them a curated answer to whatever the thing is that they want help with. And I think that that goes a long way. And a lot of times I'm not going to solve someone's problem. I'm not some like mystical Sherpa who has the answer to everything. And I can just like wave a wand and pew, you know, you have the answer. But I can try, and I can try and give you a little piece of my own experience or story or whatever that can help. And so I think just doing that for years, and I had an article that I never wrote, but it was like how I got to 40,000 followers on Twitter in 6 years. You know, it was like so long. This is going to be like days or whatever, like 1,800 days it took me to get it, because it's so unsexy and it's not a hacky thing. It's not a tactic. But that's how it works. And that's how you build an actual quality community of people. And even now with the Buy My Future community, which I'm sure we'll talk about here in a minute, but that community itself is now growing, but it's growing at a pace that it's small and it's really hyper like excited. Like they're like really tuned in, they're hyper connected. It's really an awesome community. And I'm there for them. Like they're even still surprised. And I'm like, guys, you bought my future. Like you paid me for something that is like, I'm gonna be here for you. Like that's the whole point of this. And they're even surprised and they're like, wow, you respond really quickly. I'm like, yeah, I care. Like that's what I want to do. So again, sorry for the long-winded answers, but just got a lot of stuff.
I mean, that sounds amazing, but it must take a ton of time, right? I mean, you said you probably have hundreds of people emailing you. How do you manage your time and deal with that?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think I've gotten much better at it, but I also believe that the work I do is not the like simple definition of work as most people define it, right? Like I don't show up and then turn it off. Like this is my life. What I do is my life. The creating is my life. The community building is my life. And it may sound weird to some people, but I get more enjoyment out of sitting on my laptop at 9 p.m. answering emails than I would if I was sitting on my couch watching some show on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are amazing shows on Netflix. I love them. But I also get so much joy out of responding to someone who's like, I'm struggling with self-doubt. I got myself into $100,000 in debt myself. Like my boyfriend just left me. I don't know what to do in my life. Of course, I don't have all the answers for this person. I'm not going to solve everything. But I can tell them, hey, really sorry about the self-doubt. Like, let's dig into that a little bit. What's that about? Like, is it a business thing? Is it a personal thing? I'm not going to be able to help you with everything. But what is that? Also, here's a debt article that I wrote. This gives you these specific steps of how I got out of debt, and you can do the exact same thing. And also, like, I'm listening to you. Like, I'm a person here who is listening to you. And I'll tell you what, just doing that for some people is enough that it changes their whole perspective, their whole life. Like, it's someone who acknowledged that this was going on, and it also gave them the courage to put it out there where they probably couldn't have said those honest things to their close friends or family because they'd be judged or they'd be outcast or whatever. So, yeah, I really believe in that. And it does take a lot of time to answer your question. Like I spend so much time doing that because it's the thing that I want to do. And I don't think about retiring. You know, I don't think about stopping doing this. I think about just continuing to create and put things out into the world and interact with people and have conversations like this, because I'm not going to do anything more enjoyable than this in my life. Even like a vacation, like a lavish vacation, I'm bored like 3 hours into it. Like I just can't sit still. I just want to do stuff.
It's amazing. I mean, you really do care. And I also see I hear your podcast and I read your articles and I read your emails, and it really seems that you really care and that you really put a lot of time and effort into helping other people. The thing that, in my experience, at least, David, I don't know if it was yours, once we had the Side Project Accelerator that we're running right now, so we had all of the people coming from Side Project Accelerator wanting to get help, like in a personal, on a personal level. And plus, I don't know, like I have also the Israeli design community because I have an Israeli design blog. So a lot of people reach out to me about that. And I also have all the other things going on, business, life. I have two kids, so a lot of logistics. And what I found is that all of these kind of like people I really want to help, I got to a point where I can't help them all. Although I know that I am a person who really, I really care. I really want to help. And I found that it's very hard for me to help, especially when, like, I don't know, like you say, like 9 o'clock p.m., I am eating dinner with my wife. And all of a sudden, I get a Slack message from someone who really needs my help. But I say, you know, no, I'm with my wife. I should be with my wife. Kind of like, how do you do that? How do you, I mean, you have a girlfriend for a long time, right? Caroline is her name?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So how do you give time for her? How do you make time for friends and family and all of that stuff when you have so much interactions going on in so many channels?
I like that we're digging deep into this. This is fun. So yeah, I have a very different set of circumstances, but I strongly believe that everybody has the amount of time they need. They're just not willing to sacrifice to work with that time that they have. So when people complain to me, like a perfect example, I wrote this morning ritual article that went gangbusters on the internet. It actually went viral. We can actually say that word. It really did happen. It wasn't just like 12 retweets. It got over 1 million views. It was posted on a bunch of different things. And I kept getting emails from people that were like, oh, this article's so great for like a dude who lives by himself or has a girlfriend, doesn't have like a job or whatever. And I'm like, I've built this life. This is my life. I've made these decisions. I have set myself up for this. This is why I have this. Also, get up 10 minutes earlier. Get up an hour earlier. Stop watching TV. You know, like if you want things to happen in your life, you're going to have to sacrifice something. That's just the truth. You want success. You want money. You have to cut other things out. Friends, partying, enjoying your free time. That's what it takes. I'm sorry. That's it. That's the real talk. Done. End of discussion. Now, balance is a very interesting thing because just as you mentioned, you have kids, you have a wife, you have things, you know, you want your own free space too.
Yeah.
And I am the same way. So I have really actually cut back a lot on what I used to do. I mean, I literally used to be attached at the hip to my phone and I still kind of am, but not as much as I used to be. I mean, I would try and respond within lightning time to everything. And now, you know, I check Twitter maybe 2 or 3 times a day. I check Facebook once or twice a week. I check my email multiple times a day, but I don't leave it open all day. And Slack is pretty much the only thing because I do feel like I have this connection to the Buy My Future community. That's really the only thing that I like really want to give solid quality value to, especially early on here. But I really do try and take time for myself. And I don't feel like I have to tell people that. I feel like people know that and they experience that they want time for themselves just as much as they want your attention. And that their problem that they're going to put out into the world in front of you, it doesn't need to be solved this minute. And it's also not fair to ask you to be there at every beck and call for them. And so you have to kind of establish that space and that thing. And I've actually, I can tell you in multiple occasions, I mean, probably hundreds of occasions, I've responded to someone super late at night or, you know, right away on something, whatever. And they're like, Jason, you didn't have to respond that quickly. You know, like this could have waited. And I'm like, oh, well, it didn't seem like it could have, you know, it seemed super important, but I wanted to respond. So, you know, really, to come back to the crux of your question, I think every single person has to find their own balance. I think every single person has to figure out what is the most important thing in their life. And then you just step down from there. You know, like my family comes first. I set up time for dinner and breakfast and time with my wife and nothing is going to impede upon that. But then you just have to understand those hours that you're not able to be there and do that are hours that you're not putting into whatever you're trying to build and be okay with that. That is an okay thing that's life is more than the things that you create and the things that you work on. So you just have to figure out what works the best for you.
Yeah, I love that answer. Gives me some food for thought. Thank you.
So I think at this point, you mentioned it a few times, but we got to dive into this. You're talking about Buying My Future. So tell us about the Buy My Future, the next project, I guess, you're working on.
Yeah, we're 2 days into the second launch of this project. And last year I had this idea because I started getting into like the digital product space. So courses, and I'd written my book and I had a couple little workshops and things that I'd done. And I was like, man, it's kind of a pain to sell these things over and over again. You know, like I come up with a new idea and I want to help people write their own book. And I create a course with my buddy, Paul Jarvis, who you guys know. And I'm like, I got to relaunch this whole thing. You know, I got to like do the whole marketing thing again. Like that's kind of a pain. And if I'm going to keep coming up with ideas, I'm going to always feel like I'm selling. So it just dawned on me one day, actually, while I was on a social media break, which we could get into the weeds of. I'm passionate about social media breaks and our addiction to social media. But it was while I was on a break that I had this thought, this moment of clarity where I was like, what if I packaged everything up that I do and I sold it as one thing? And my immediate thought was like, it's like a lifetime subscription to me. I was like, well, that sounds kind of weird. You know, that's this kind of, I don't know if I could pitch that to people. But then I thought about, you know, I've created a bunch of stuff, software products, info products, all these things. I know I'm going to create more. What if I sold it as like a buy-in and you get everything I'm ever going to create and you never pay me another dollar? Because for me, I looked at it from two angles when I first thought of that. Number one, I'm getting maximum customer lifetime value at a price that I'm selling this for. So when I opened up Buy My Future last year, it was $1,000. And my products were worth much more than that, but I know that not every person buys every product. So I'm not getting $1,000 from every customer. Then I looked at it as, well, what if I could deliver the maximum amount of value to a customer for one purchase? And you there's not a lot of those opportunities out there. And I looked at this idea and I was like, wow, this really feels like a win-win for both sides. And that, again, like I control it. Just like the last name sale, I can control what I give people. Like I'm in the full control of this. You don't get to like have a legally binding thing where you're like, well, I get one of your kids. So I also get like access to your bank account and all these things. Like, no, you don't. Like you get access to the products I want you to have access to, but I'm also a giver. Like I think you guys hear that. The people listening to this hear that. I'm going to over deliver on what I'm setting up here. And so I did a big lead up to this project. I wrote a 60-day journal on Medium, and I chose Medium instead of my own blog because I wanted to have a place where more people could find it. You know, and Medium was really kind of up and coming, and I really try and find those kind of up and coming places where I can be and I can show up and get attention from other people. So every day for 60 days, I showed up and I wrote about this project. I didn't name the project. That was the only thing I kept from everybody, but I talked about the self-doubt I was feeling. I talked about the branding that my girlfriend was doing for the site. I talked about how I was going to be getting on podcast interviews because that was one place I wanted to do marketing. I talked about doing customer calls. I talked about coming up with pricing. I mean, I literally talked every single day about all these different aspects of the project, and people followed along. They joined that journey of this project that was going to launch. And so when it launched, I had built up 2 months of buzz about this idea, and that really led to like a big splash. Plus, it was a real crazy idea, right? Like it was a real weird, crazy idea that I was letting people buy access to everything I created in the past, everything I will create for the rest of my life, and you only pay me one time and you will never pay me another dollar. And so when people heard about this, they're like, wait, how this has got to be good, too good to be true. And the more that people kept reading about it, they're like, oh, I get it. Like, this is a subscription to Jason. Like, that's what it is, but it's a one-time thing. You're never going to pay me again. And this is a really cool opportunity. The thing that I didn't see coming with Buy My Future that has become the overall, like, everyone loves it, is the community. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I overlooked that. For me, it was like a side thing. I was like, everyone wants the stuff, right? They want the online course platform. They want the digital products. They want the future software things I'm going to make. I mean, they like that stuff. They use that stuff. But the community is above and beyond the best thing about it. And I just love that. And the people who are even joining in this launch, you know, we're a day and a half into this year's launch, and people are so excited. I mean, they get in, they're like, I've been in so many communities on the internet. I have never seen so much activity. I've never seen such good people. You know, there's no haters. There's nothing else because people are spending good money to be here and they're putting themselves in a level playing field. Yeah. So yeah, this year we're at the second year of Buy My Future. It's open for 2 weeks. It's $1,500 this year. There's 17 guaranteed products and services, which are really cool. I average about 4 a year. So, I mean, you're going to get a ton of value in the next couple of years, guaranteed. But the community access is also the awesome thing. I mean, there's now 200 plus people who are in the community. I don't know where that's going to end up at the end of the launch. 178 people bought the first year. So we'll see how many buy this year. As of right now, we're at like 24 as of recording this, which is really cool.
Wow.
So 5 more since earlier email, huh?
So I think I sent you guys an email last night or whenever that was, but yeah, 5 wow. more since the end of the first launch day. So super cool. It's just really fun to watch. And this community is, I love it. I'm so excited to be letting people in.
So tell us about the community. What does that exactly mean? That's a Slack group or what do they get in the community?
Yeah, it's a Slack channel, and then there's also a dashboard that has kind of all their goods and services. And one of the next products that I'm actually making is a community directory tool. So it's kind of weird when you think about it. Like Slack is really great for chat and conversation, and you know, Twitter and Facebook, those are good for those things. But it's really kind of hard to like see a community in one place. Like who are the people who are in it? What are the things that they like? How can you connect with them? And I don't want it to be a messaging platform because that's what Slack does. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily want it to be a platform where they share information because that's Twitter and Facebook. But there's like this in-between of how do you find the other people? You know, how do you know? And we tried a Google spreadsheet and it was just a shit show because the columns got so long with all people's stuff and it's so hard to look at. So yeah, we're actually building a tool. I'm building this with Paul Jarvis and Zach Gilbert, the guys who I built Of Course Books with. And we're building this community directory tool where you can literally set up a community. Your people can upload their profile, a blurb about them, some links, and then tag themselves either based on the tags you set up or that they set up. And then they can see each other. And it's a really easy way just to find other people, see other people, which I'm really excited about. So that to me is like the next evolution of the community. But I do these quarterly calls with the community where I share all my revenue numbers and my projects, not because I want to be like, look how much money I'm making, because I want to say, this one sucked. This one did really well. I wrote a big article. Look at how it impacted this one, and they can learn from those things. And then, you know, just talking about the upcoming projects and what they're working on. So that's the other thing. You know, every single day in that Slack community, people are talking about their stuff, their worries, their launches, their courses, whatever. And I'm there, but I usually get up because I'm on the West Coast. I'm getting up at like 7 a.m. People have asked questions and 12 people have already answered the questions, which is so cool. I'm not even able to answer first anymore, which is, I think that's like showing that you have a really good community. So yeah, that's been the big shining star, I think, for Buy My Future is that awesome community.
That's awesome.
And by the way, I think this thing about having a community and wanting to build a custom tool for them, it's like not the first time that we hear of this, because we talked to Bryn Jackson, who is the owner of a network of podcasts called Spec FM. And now they are like a network of designers and developers. And now they need a tool. They also have a very active Slack group, and they want to move it out of the Slack group and building something custom again, because the Slack is not enough and social media, exactly what you said. So maybe this is, you know, somewhere in the future of like, you know, customized communities.
But
it's interesting.
Yeah.
And I want to take that even further to what Sagi just said, but I noticed a small thing you mentioned. So you're building the tool and actually going to use the tool that you need for yourself and also sell it, right?
Yep. So the fun thing about this is that Buy My Future, and I had a little bit of vision here. So when I thought about the Buy My Future idea, one of the things was like, oh, I can build a little group who will always be my beta testers for anything I want to do. That's really cool, because they're going to get these products for free. So they're going to be the first ones to see it. I can get that feedback right away. I don't have to go out and get it. I'm not reinventing the wheel. Also, if they like it, they'll share it. So now I have advocates. I have people who want to talk about these things, who want to share them. Mm-hmm. And I do think that, you know, as Sagi was just mentioning, the micro communities, I think, are where a lot of this is going to go. And I was actually, my girlfriend and I had talked about this idea about a year ago, that we really think that like SMS, obviously SMS is huge. Everyone knows the messaging is huge, but with micro communities and business, there's a big opportunity, I think, to like bring this stuff together and to be able to reach people. And I think we're figuring a little bit of that out. And we're going to try a bunch of stuff with this online kind of community directory tool where, yes, it's a thing you can search and see, but it's also a way for you to interact with your community where there's not a lot of noise, where you really control the output of information as the community owner. And we're really excited about what that might look like. And, you know, who knows? That's the beautiful thing about making a lot of stuff. While you can't focus all of your effort on one big project to rule them all, I don't like the pressure of one big project to rule them all. I've been there. That was I Wear Your Shirt for me. And all the chips had to be put in that one thing. I like having 17 projects. It's crazy, you know, and some of them have to, you know, kind of die after a while, which is fine. But you really find out which ones stand the test of time and which ones people really want. And, you know, I like that. And I know that I'm a special breed of human who can manage all these different things. But I'm really excited for what that means, and the fact that all these people who buy my future get every single one of these things for free forever, and they never pay for them, which is so rad.
That's amazing.
So I got to ask you, because, you know, everything you're talking about, you're just a content machine. Like you said, you're working on tons of projects, you're writing tons to promote them, you're creating, you know, YouTube videos, blog posts, and everything. And I know Sagi and I are in a similar situation now, trying to promote the Side Project Accelerator and doing our own, you know, the podcast and our newsletter. And
and just to give a bit of background, our Side Project Accelerator is now finishing its first batch. It was an 8-week program, and now we want to launch the next batch in October. So the thing is, we're still so into the first batch that we can't even start to promote the next batch.
This is exactly what I want to ask you about. It's like, I'm listening to everything you're doing. I'm like, I want to do that too. I want to write this thing also. I want to do that article, and I want to do this email. How do you do it all?
it's a really good question. And it's a constant struggle for me of like, I want to do everything right now, but I also don't have to do everything right now. And I think that's like that's a scarcity mindset that our brains put on us of like, if I don't do this right now, someone else will, and I won't be able to do it. That's not true. You know, like there's so actual few people out there who put in the work and take an idea to execution. Sure, you might hear or even see a small glimpse of someone doing something somewhat similar. But I would even pressure you guys to say, like, why does your next batch of your accelerator need to come so quickly after your first one? Why not give it a little bit of time so you can actually do what you need to do to finish this one and then move into the next one when it's actually a better time for you guys, who can then give the most value to these folks and do that? And the reason you probably don't do that is you look at like, oh, well, we have all these other things we want to do. And, you know, I like to think about my next opportunity is not my last opportunity. So even if something passes me by that I'm like, oh, I kind of miss, you know, being able to do that because I was working all these other things, it's okay because something else is going to come along. And you have to trust yourself. You have to trust your gut. You have to believe in the fact that I'm going to do this. And I know that's hard for people just getting started, right? They're like, well, Jason, I've never created anything. Okay, well, then go create some stuff. You know, like get your first couple under your belt so that you can experience what that feels like. And then you can know, oh, I need to have the content plan. I need to have the consistency of showing up. I need to do a 60-day journal and write every single day. You know, I need to build an audience over the course of years. And then I can look back and go, well, I've got too many things on my plate. I should probably figure out how to organize all those and move forward. And that's where I am. You know, I've done so much stuff now. I've put so many things out into the world that now I know not all of it has to be done now. And in fact, it's actually better if I give it a little bit of room to breathe because that gives my audience a little bit of room to breathe because they're not feeling like, I mean, Jason creates a lot of stuff, but there's a break. You know, there's enough time where they're like, oh, it's been like a month or two since Jason's made something. What's he doing? Is he being lazy? You know, where'd he go?
Yeah. And actually, I remember you took a formal break from your newsletter or your mailing list in July, was it?
Yep.
Yeah. I remember getting that email.
I really believe in breaks. Like this has been a big thing for me that it always scared me as someone who relies on their community and their audience and content and people to show up and buy things to say, well, if I disappear from their inbox or if I stop being on social media for a month, they're all going to forget I exist. No, they're not. Like they're there for you. And I think that comes with the time that you put in. That goes back to like all the effort that we all put in to build our communities, and you earn that, right? That's an earned thing that you do. And I don't think that if you're starting out a business, you can say, I'm going to work on it for 3 months and then I'm going to take a month off. I don't think it's going to work out for you. I think you have to actually put in the time and you have to work on it and you have to be there. But now that I'm so many years into this, and specifically for my newsletter, you know, I wrote consistently for basically 2 years. And then I finally said, I think I can take a break. You know, I think they'll be okay without me. And what was really funny was I took that break and I really enjoyed the time when I was off. I didn't really like stop working. I was still doing stuff because I just can't stop. But I wasn't forcing myself to do that writing. I wasn't forcing myself to be on social media. And I kept getting emails from people that are like, my Mondays suck. Like, I want your emails back, you know, and you build a little bit of that, like that fondness, the heart grows fonder with distance, right? Distance makes the heart grow fonder. That's how you say it. And that you realize that not showing up for a little while makes people realize that they're missing out, right? That, oh, I do actually really like this. Like I should enjoy more of this while I can have it. And that I think that that's a really good thing. And social media is so crowded, right? I mean, there's just so much noise and space and it just feels like you're constantly running on a treadmill uphill at 100 miles an hour. And I don't like that feeling. I don't like that feeling with anything that I'm doing anymore. So I want to feel like I'm in control, that I can turn it on and off, and then I can take breaks and that people like, you guys are still there. You guys are still reading. Yeah, I disappeared for a while. But if anything, you're like, I can't wait for Jason to come back because I want to know what crazy, stupid thing he's going to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I can totally relate. There's a few email newsletters that I really, really love. There's daily ones, weekly ones. And, you know, sometimes I just have other stuff going on and I don't open them up. So I like what you're saying there. You're not taking a break for a year. You took a break for a month or something like that.
So, yeah. And I think, yeah, you definitely earn that. And the time grows longer depending on what you want to be doing and how you can kind of like figure that out for your own self.
So what did you do during this break?
I watched a lot of Netflix. I really honestly like forced myself to kind of be a slob, like watching movies and reading and just taking a break. But I did get ahead 8 weeks on my newsletter while I was on a break.
Cheater.
I know. I sent my editor like 6 articles 1 week because I couldn't stop thinking about stuff. And so I started writing and she wrote me a message back and she was like, you're the worst at taking breaks. Like you are more prolific during a break than when you're actually on and working. And it's just because it's how I operate. You know, like I said, when I go on vacation, 3 hours in, I'm completely bored. Like I've already established the fact that what am I going to do? Like my brain keeps going. And so I think that's just, I have to understand that's my DNA is like Gary Vee likes to talk about, like he knows his DNA. I know that about myself as well. And so these breaks, it really becomes like a push and a pull where I'm really pushing against my natural urge to create and to share and to help and to be there to say, okay, well, but let's just take a pause from that because you need a break. You need to recharge your batteries. And when I came back from that break, I mean, I was pumped. I was amped up. I knocked so many things off my to-do list. I caught up on a lot of things that obviously piled up, but I had this renewed energy, which is perfect for the launch of Buy My Future because I need it. You know, I'm going to be answering every email and every message and everything because this is like the biggest project of my life for 2 weeks. I got to have the energy to do that. If I didn't take that break ahead of time, I would probably be run down already because of so much emotional stress and pressure that gets put on yourself.
Yeah. And it makes sense. All right. I want to just like kind of see what actionable items we can give the audience hearing this right now. If they want to launch their own thing, and I'm talking about some kind of course or something to sell online. So in preparing the launch, what are the tips that you can give to people? Showing up is one, I know, is a very important thing that you talk about. And it's very important. We, David and I guess, learned it with time. And like, do you have some kind of like strategy, how to come up with a strategy, some tips on how to come up with a strategy and do it?
Yeah. So I'm going to say those to you, but I'm also going to tell people that they're not going to remember these. So go to jasondoesstuff.com/start. I wrote this article with this exact problem in mind because this is an email I get all the time. It's like, okay, I don't have an idea. How do I come up with an idea? I have an idea. What do I do with it? I'm trying to launch a course. Like, what is the stuff that I do? This is literally, like I wrote in the article, if I was starting over from scratch with nothing, this is what I would do. And so I go through that in detail. But the basics of it are, number one, you first really need to identify if the thing that you're trying to create has an audience that's willing to pay for it. Not an audience that's willing to cheerlead you along the way. There's a big difference there. And I've learned that over the years. There's a lot of people who will say, that's a great idea. I love that. I will buy that. As opposed to people who say, here's my credit card. Take my money. I want to pay you for that. And you have to get to the here's my credit card. Take my money part. Because if you don't, you don't have a business. What you do is you have an idea and you have cheerleaders, and that doesn't pay the mortgage. That doesn't help put food on your table. And you really have to establish that. So for me, it's about starting really small. It's about going into your inbox. It's about finding people you can talk to. It's about looking at your previous customers. And if you don't have customers, it's about defining who your ideal customer is and finding them and having conversations with them. And what's going to sound really boring about all the things that I've just said and I'm going to say is it's work. It's putting in hours of work. It's about consistently doing the thing. And it's about understanding that you're not going to make the best version of whatever it is you want to create the first time around. That's impossible. It is. You're not even going to make it on the fourth or fifth time around. But if you just know that that thing solves a problem for someone, or if it's extremely useful or extremely entertaining, that it will get better. And that nothing we are making anymore these days, especially with the internet, is etched in stone. It's not a thing that just, you know, like when people make an online course, they try and make the most perfect course ever the first time around. They want the highest quality video, the best written content, all these downloadable PDFs, a quiz, a certificate, all this stuff. I'm like, who cares? Has anybody asked you for any of those things? Has anybody even paid you for this idea yet? Yet you want to make every bell and whistle, and then you want to automate all the sales funnels and all the things. No, get your first sale. Talk to someone about them going through the basic version of your content. Did it change their life? Did it help them? Did it solve the problem? Did it even just make them happy? If it did, great. Now improve it. And it's such a step-by-step incremental process to get to a point where you can do things like selling your future. You can do things like cranking out a project in a week or writing a book in 2 weeks because you put in this consistent effort over and over. And I think that the best metaphor that I can give everybody is one that I just talked about on the Invisible Office Hours podcast with Paul Jarvis is, everybody wants the treasure map, but what everyone forgets about the treasure map is that it winds and it curves and it goes through sunken ships and it goes through islands and it goes around and there's a like an animal that attacks you in the midway. That's the real journey to be successful. But what everybody else thinks a treasure map is a starting point, one dot in between, and an X. Mm-hmm. It's not it. It is absolutely not it. And you're never going to find that treasure map. It doesn't exist. You can buy all the courses in the world. You can listen to all the e-celebrities in the world tell you that you can chase your dream and do it. But until you actually try and make your dream a reality and you put in the work to make it happen, you're not going to get there.
Love it. Love it. And I read your article and I really can't stress enough for everyone to read the article. And I'm actually having thoughts right now, Dee, about like, you know, us launching the next batch and maybe taking more time to doing this right instead of just rushing to do it. But yeah, it gives us food for thought. So I guess it gives the audience, I guess, a lot of value as well. So now that we talked about the launch strategy and building a strategy for launch, so why you launch? Can you talk about that a bit? Because I know there's like tons of work putting in inside the launch itself, talking to people that, you know, that want to buy it but are on the fence, and people that just bought, onboarding them. How do you do all that?
It's tough. You learn from each time. I mean, what you don't do is you don't try and make it all perfect the first time around, Because if this is the first time you're doing it, it's not going to happen. But what you try and do, and this is what I've done now over the years, is I just look at, okay, what do I want the experience to be for someone? And where do I want them to go when all this happens? And the other really important thing that you should do, two things I think actually are important. Number one, I mentioned this when I talked about iReassure, which is people need following up with. You should not be afraid to follow up multiple times to get someone to buy something, to support you, whatever it is. Because if you're proud of your product, you should not be ashamed to promote it. And I think so many creators and creatives are because they feel like it's shameless and it's selling out. No, you're trying to make a living. You're trying to like get money for the thing that you want to do. You should be wanting to promote it every second of every day to a point when you're so annoying that people don't want to hear from you anymore. But if you're doing something great, then people won't mind hearing from you. You know, like I've sent out 3 emails in a row to my Action Army list. I've never done that. But it's because I'm so excited about this project. There's cool things happening that I can share. So anyway, that's one thing. You need to follow up. The second thing is that, and I think that you guys could actually benefit from this, we're talking about your accelerator. I'm going to give you something practical here and that other people can do as well. Talk to the customers that you already had or have. What are they saying? How are they describing your project back to you? What problems are you solving for them that maybe you didn't even think you were solving? What are the little things that they're saying in their words that you can then turn and use? And so that's what I did when I launched Buy My Future the first time. I had a bunch of customer calls. I explained the project to them, something they'd never heard of, something I'd never done, something they'd never seen. And then I asked them, will you repeat back to me what you think this project sounds like? And the words that they said, I was like, are they not getting it? And I'm like, no, what they're doing is they're translating it in how they understand. And then I started listening for patterns. And it was only 3 or 4 people that I had to hear the same thing from, where number one, the community was like such a big selling point. And I was going to like stuff it down the bottom and be like, and you get a community. And it became like access to the community. You know, like that was a huge thing because that's what people really wanted. So following up with your people when you're doing a launch is great. And then also talking to your customers and speaking their language. So figuring out what they say. But now let's get back to some more tactics on doing this launch stuff. One of the things is to prepare early. So whether you're doing a Kickstarter, whether you're launching a course, whether you're putting a piece of software out into the world, whether you're launching a podcast, don't start promoting it on the day of. Plan months ahead of time to say, all right, what email do I want to send out a couple of weeks beforehand to get people ready? What tweets do I want to be writing? Where do I want to be posting it? You know, write out a list of sites. Can I put this on Designer News? Can I put it on Product Hunt? Can I put it on Hacker News? Can I put it on Reddit? What sub forum on Reddit? Who should I start talking to on Reddit now, 3 months, 6 months ahead of time, so that I'm not just dropping a project and being like, hey, shameless plug, here's my thing. Yeah. Write all of these places where you can promote this now. Then do another thing. Go into your inbox and write all the names of the people who you want to reach out to who could possibly help you promote the project. Put them in a Google spreadsheet. Write down their emails, their names, write the date that you email them, write the date that you're going to follow up with them, and then do that. Talk to those people. And you can do the same thing with your customers. And you know, then when it comes to the actual like thing that you're putting out into the world, that should just be done way ahead of time. You know, I hear a lot of creators who are like, you know, I want to do the launch plan and create the thing at the same time. You don't have enough brain power. You don't have enough like mental energy to do that. Finish the product first, the thing that you're going to sell. Let that be done. Then work on all the promotion of it and build up to it so that you don't have to be doing 2 at the same time. Because when something breaks or something goes wrong, which it will, then you're gonna be like, well, something has to give. You know, I have to figure out how to fix this thing because this is the thing that matters. I can't write another email. I can't be on social media. Well, guess what happens? When you can't do those things, people don't know about it and they don't buy. So you're in this like vicious cycle of trying to create, trying to sell that doesn't work. So the last part of that, I think, is like making the onboarding experience smooth. To me, that's like, do that afterwards. Do that at a point where you have to do it so manually that it's painful, and then figure out how to make those painstaking manual things automatic. And so, you know, the first year with Buy My Last Name, man, too many projects in my brain. The like first names of year kids. With Buy My Future, last year, I didn't automate everything. The only thing I had was one web hook to a piece of software. And the rest of it was just like, enter your email, I'll figure it out. And I had to manually do stuff for 154 people. It was a lot of work. But I told myself, how much time would I have spent ahead of time trying to figure all that out and probably doing it wrong and whatever? I can just learn, you know, going forward. So now the second year, everything's a bit more automated. But it's only going to get better as years keep going on. You know, and someone actually asked in the Slack channel, I think it was the other day, like, Jason, how are you getting everybody in this Slack channel so quickly? I'm like, I'm not. Like, they're getting themselves in here because I've put the link in multiple places so they can see it in multiple places. I've reminded them when they're buying through the email structure, but I only learned that from last year. when I had to literally email every single person, like, here's the Slack link, here's the Slack link, you got to sign up with your email. You know, like I had to do it manually only to learn, okay, here's where the problem was. Now I have to address it. And that's just something that you have to do. And I'm really sorry for your listeners if they're like, gosh, this guy isn't giving me any quick wins or any quick tips. This is the real stuff. This is what it really takes. Yeah, this is what it is. This is what you have to do. And you just learn from experience. And, you know, I'll tell people too, if they want to read the Buy My Future breakdown article that's on my site, it's jasondoesstuff.com/buymyfuture. I talk about everything that I did for the launch of Buy My Future from the first year. And you can get tactics and tips and things that you can apply, how I reached out to podcasters, how I, you know, set up the email structure, what exact emails I wrote, how I did the customer calls, all the things I just mentioned, I go into some detail about, and the return on investment of those things. And it may help you, but you can't just copy and paste it. And I'll end my long diatribe here with a quote attributed to somebody, whether it's Kevin Kelly or Justin Jackson or whatever. And it's, what got them there won't get you there. Mm-hmm. What got me to make $178,000 selling my future is not going to get you to making $178,000 selling your course. It may help you make a couple extra $100, may help you make a couple extra $1,000, which would be rad. That would be awesome. You didn't have that before you learned something from me or whoever else you're reading, but you have to apply that stuff to your own kind of identity. And it goes back to the very beginning of steal like an artist, right? Find something like, ooh, I want that tactic. I'm going to apply it and I'm going to make it work for me.
Well, I think, yeah, definitely agree. And I think what you said there is also important about prioritizing too. The way you prioritized what to tackle and what not to, the things that you said in the first round that you left off and didn't automate were things that are kind of like the good problem to have. You know, like the rich man's problems. You said, oh man, I had to, you know, 154 times going, well, this was after someone paid you $1,000. You sent them, you know, okay, I'll send them an email with a link and manually do that.
Yeah.
So I think there's something to be said there about prioritizing in a launch or in any sort of sale for a product of the things that have to be done, because if you don't do, like you said, social media or something to promote it, then nobody will buy it. And if people buy it and you don't have time to tackle this sort of automation, okay, next time I'll get to it. But, you know, at least they bought it and I can now, fine, I'll send them some emails or do some things manually.
Yeah. Get to the point of having the problems of like, oh man, I have all this money and now I have to do work for this money. You know, like
exactly.
Good problem to have, right? Like you learn those lessons. And I think I'll throw one other thing in there that people can do. And this is going to overwhelm people with all the things that I think I've just told them. But the one thing that I think is important besides the follow-up, besides talking to your customers, is plan to surprise and delight your buyers with something. So whether it's an online course and you have bonus lessons, whether it's a piece of software and you have maybe some extra features, or you have like hands-on customer support, whether it's like my Buy My Future thing. When people buy my future, they get into the dashboard. There's 3 eBooks that are in there that are guides to taking action, being more creative, or making more profit with your business. Those aren't promoted anywhere. I don't talk about them anywhere. But people come in, they're like, what are these? And I'm like, it's a little surprise and delight. That's something I made for you so you could have it. And people are like, cool. You know, like I didn't expect that. That's a little cherry on top. And so anything that you're doing, if you have a podcast and you have a sponsor for it, you know, surprise the sponsor with something cool, but plan ahead, think about it, like put some time and effort into like, how can I make this experience a little bit better? That doesn't take a lot of time. It's just a little something you can do, because those things can go a long way for people as well, that they just remember that stuff.
In choosing these type of things, you said you didn't promote the ebooks beforehand. Is it something, how do you find the balance? Because maybe if you had promoted those ebooks beforehand, you would have made more sales or something like that. How do you find the balance of what to hide and what to delight with and what to actually offer?
Yeah, usually the things that you delight with are stuff that is not monumental to the success of the project, right? Like 3 additional ebooks is not, I don't think it'd drive a crazy amount of stuff. And you also have to be willing to say, I'm okay with the fact that if someone doesn't know about this and that doesn't convert a couple more sales, so what? You know what? Okay. I'm not in the business of making $1 million on everything I do and squeezing out every dollar from every customer. I don't care. I want the people who are like, I saw that. I want to buy that. I believe in it. Yes, I'm going to sign up for it. Oh, look, bonus stuff. Cool. You know, I'm really excited about that. And I like to think about those things as just, it's things that I can do that aren't too stressful for me. It's not too much extra work. It's not going to take too much extra like labor on the back end when they do get that, like, oh crap, now I have to like, I think one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of entrepreneurs make when they're selling stuff is that they sell their time as part of it. Like, I'll do a one-on-one call with you, or I'll do all this stuff. What you don't realize is that, number one, people don't really give a shit about doing a one-on-one call with you. People don't care about doing one-on-one calls with me. And I feel like I have a pretty good track record in this world. And that takes up so much of your time where you're not actually giving a lot of great value. You could be doing so much more with those hours for those people. And if that's what it takes for someone to buy in, maybe you're looking at the wrong customers. You know, if people need every bell and whistle to buy, I think you have the wrong audience that's set up for you. They should believe in the idea and whatever it is that you're selling and say, I'm in for that. Oh, extra stuff? Cool. I'm down for that. That makes sense. Build that audience. And that's really what I feel like I've built with this project. And Buy My Future has been the first project where I feel like I've delivered a lot of stuff on the front end that makes everybody happy, that crosses all, checks off all the boxes, but I know that I'm going to continue to deliver value over time. And you can do that with everything, a course, a piece of software. Like, you just keep adding stuff to make your customers feel like, oh, wow, didn't know this was coming. This is even better. This is even more awesome.
Cool. That's great tip. Great tip. Yeah. Siggy, I'm blown away. I'm like, all right, let's rethink our entire strategy. Back to the drawing board.
Which is, that's so 100% normal. You know, like, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, even myself included, you have those thoughts and you're like, oh man, I screwed everything up. I did it all wrong. No. This is how it works. You do it, you learn from it, and you improve and you move forward. And, you know, I'm actually building an analytics platform right now with a buddy of mine. And the first version of it, I've told him this like 10 times. I'm like, dude, we're going to look back on this in a year and we're going to hate this. It's going to be ugly. We're going to be like, how did we even start doing this? That's where you have to be. You have to understand that you're going to start with the ugliest version of something, the worst version of it that you're not going to be proud of. But if it solves a problem and if it does a thing and it makes somebody happy, then you can improve upon it later. And it's okay to be like, hey, listen, we pivot, right? Like, we completely change the direction we're going. But we heard from our customers that they all wanted this. So that's what we're doing. And then you go, oh, this is actually working better now. I'm glad we moved away and didn't do the sunk cost bias thing where we held on to all the work and all the time that we've suffered into something because we felt like we couldn't move forward.
Yeah. All right.
Definitely. This has been an amazing call. I guess everyone who has a conversation with you probably just leaves like walking away, just scratching their head. What just happened to me?
Yeah, right. Either in a good way or a bad way, because they're like, what is this guy doing? Or they're like, okay, cool. I have lots of ideas of my own. I need to go get my shit together.
Yeah.
Well, Jason, this has been really awesome. I know Siggy and I learned a ton. I know that our listeners did as well. We will put everything in the show notes that you listed here because tons of great tools and tips.
Yeah.
And
I'm so happy that we did it because, you know, like you said, like we can scratch our heads now and we can actually be kind of feeling a bit down and like, oh, we didn't do a lot of stuff right. And I think we already got a lot of insights from this talk, but that's why we're doing these podcasts. We're getting you here on the podcast because we do feel that we can learn a lot from you. And that's what we should do. If we don't do it, they're stupid assholes.
Yeah, I love that. And to change your perspective too, right? Like go from, oh man, we've messed up a lot to, oh man, we have a lot of room for improvement. You know, yeah. Just that little shift of like, don't be down on yourself. Same thing I had to go through with myself and I still do time and time again. It's not a bad thing. It's a lesson learned. Let's move forward. That's good that happened, right? I stretched myself. I'm out of my comfort zone. That's really good stuff. So yeah, I definitely appreciate the conversation. You guys have been awesome. I'm sure that everybody who listens to this is like, when is this going to be over? There's so many crazy things. But I really thank you for the opportunity.
I really think people don't want this to be over. They want more. But Jason, really, thanks so much, man. And yeah, we'll have to follow up sometime, like in a year from now.
Definitely. So why don't you let everyone know, I mean, you've listed so many places that you are on the internet, but if people want to get in touch or people want to reach out to you, how can they get to you and everything else?
Yeah, if they're listening to this between September 20th and October 4th, 2016, because obviously they'll listen like 20 years in the future because podcasts are going to live on forever. you can buy My Future for $1,500, which is super rad. No pressure. If it sounds awesome, jump on board. It's a really cool community of people helping people create things, teach things, sell things. And otherwise, I'm at jasondoesstuff.com where you can find all my writing and join my newsletter if that sounds interesting to you. Pretty much what I've talked about all the time that we've been talking is what I write about every Monday. And I try and make people's Mondays a little bit more awesome. And yeah, that's it. I'm pretty easy to Google. So you can find me, you can look around, you can, you know, poke around the internet and stalk me if you want. And if anybody wants to email me, you can find my email easily. So yeah, I really appreciate the platform, guys.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks so much, man. Alright, so that's a wrap. Thank you, hackers, for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed the show. You can find all the links and resources from this conversation on hackingui.com/podcast. And just before we go, we want to share with you something that you might find useful.
As you know, we are voracious readers and consume a ton of articles, books, podcasts, and videos about design, development, and side projects. We curate the hell out of everything, and each week we send a short roundup email of our favorites. If that sounds like an email you'd enjoy getting, then we'd love to have you join our awesome community, which already has more than 20,000 happy members from all over the world. You can sign up on HackingUI.com.
By the way, on HackingUI.com, you'll also find some other cool stuff like the Side Project Accelerator, our 8-week online program in which we teach everything that we learned in the 3 years working and scaling Hacking UI as a side project before we quit our day jobs.
And you'll also find our resources page, which reached the top of the week on Product Hunt Tech, and our events section, which is filled with conferences and meetups for designers and developers.
Hey, D, don't forget the tees, man. We also got some cool t-shirts for designers.
Sugi, again with the t-shirts?
Hey, I designed those, but really, last thing, if you enjoyed this, we would really love to hear from you, either by tweeting at us at HackingUI or by reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Those reviews really go a long way and help us and even make our day.
All right, we'll see you next week, hackers, and remember to keep hacking.